old Edward taking the crown from the tremulous grasp of the Lancastrian king Henry VI. In the years that followed, it began to turn inwards, a destructive chain of rebellion, deposition, vendetta, fratricide, usurpation, and regicide, all originating within the House of York itself. The dynasty's end was brutal. It came on the 22nd of August 1485 at Bosworth, with the killing of Richard III, the ritual humiliation of his battered body, and his burial in an unmarked grave in a Leicester priory. But whatever the victorious Tudors later liked to say about Bosworth being the victory of the Red Rose over the White, the battle was also a settling of scores between two factions of the House of York, White on White. At the heart of this was the relationship between three royal brothers, Edward IV, Richard, Duke of Gloucester, later Richard III, and sandwiched between them, the middle brother, George, Duke of Clarence, who wanted to be king but never was. Contemporaries acknowledged that these were three men of unusual gifts. Shoulder to shoulder, they were practically invincible. Yet, as one Yorkist insider put it in the aftermath of Bosworth, the three brothers could not avoid conflict with each other. This, he implied, was the tragic flaw in the Yorkist dynasty. The rise and fall of the House of York remains one of the most seductive and contested stories in English history. By the usual dynastic standards, it was over in the blink of an eye, the Yorkists' 24-year period in power lasting as long as their successor Henry VII's reign on its own. The three brothers themselves burned fiercely and died young, Edward at 40, Clarence at 28, and Richard still only 32 when he was killed at Bosworth. Yet the House of York did shake off its usurper origins to establish itself as England's undisputed ruling dynasty. In the process, it achieved a kind of greatness, restoring the monarchy's authority and reforming its finances, in the process creating conditions for renewed peace and prosperity. This all happened under Edward IV's rule. A king of flawed, compulsive magnificence, his manifold excesses and contradictions provoked both admiration and disgust in contemporaries, and have often left historians struggling to reconcile them. When Edward seized the throne, Clarence was 11, Richard was 9. The civil turmoil in which the brothers grew up shaped the way they saw the world and their place in it. It was a time of acute insecurity, when political, social, and legal norms were bent out of shape by warring protagonists for whom the system had long since ceased to work, and who sensed, in its weaknesses, an opportunity to remould the world according to their desires. At times, the centre seemed unable to hold. Politicians urging unity and moderation watched aghast as factions tore at each other, all restraint set aside. This was a landscape littered by murders and executions enacted through fearful self-defence and hungry ambition, and justified with the merest skim of legal process. Speaking the language of populism and clamouring for reform, squabbling elites raised private armies and manipulated widespread public discontent to their own advantage, sparking insurgency and revolt against a battered political establishment. The system of hereditary monarchy itself seemed to teeter on the brink. These outbreaks of bloody score-settling appalled contemporaries. In trying to make sense of the disorder, people reached for the language of sickness, both in terms of explaining what had happened to politics and how it made them feel. Trying to survive in this failing, uncertain system was a matter of political agility, timing, and luck, and in the tangle of extended families and networks of affinity that bound England together, it was all too easy to make the wrong choices. Existing attachments and loyalties became more contingent, quickly dropped in favour of new friendships, only to be abandoned in turn. All this was especially pronounced for the conflict's leading protagonists. Circumstances had thrust Edward, Clarence, and Richard into a place of exceptional power and wealth. For all three brothers, the sense that they could lose it all at an instant was rarely absent. This sense of precariousness and possibility was at times overwhelming. It distorted their behaviour and decision-making, their views of the world and of each other. This is a story that stretches across England and Wales, from London and Westminster, the country's financial and political heart, and the luxurious royal houses of the Thames Valley.